Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Murder in the North. I'm your co-host, Zach.
And I'm Kelby. And before we get into this week's episode, we both just want to apologize if we sound off. Zach and I are both battling he who shall not be named.
Voldemort.
If you know, you know. But jumping right into our case this week, it's going to be probably a little bit of a shorter one, but really good nonetheless. So our case sources this week is administrativelawblog.harpergray, CBC News, The Globe and Mail, orb.on.ca, and ontario.ca, and Wikipedia. So our case this week takes place in Toronto, Ontario, in 1985, and is about Nancy Eaton. Nancy Eaton was born on May 28, 1961, to Edward Eaton and Nancy Lee Gossage Eaton. Nancy was a heiress and a member of the prominent Eaton family, and to provide some context about Nancy and her family, the Eaton family is a Canadian dynastic family beginning in 1869, when Nancy's great-great-grandfather, Timothy Eaton, founded Eaton's.
I was actually going to ask if they were, like, a part of the family, like the Eaton Center, well, like that family.
So basically it was a national chain of department stores. And just to provide an example of how big this family's name is, after the passing of Timothy Eaton, the Toronto Mall retained the name Eaton Center in Timothy's honor. So you were right.
Nailed it.
With the success of this business, the family's net worth was approximately $2 billion, which is quite large considering this all happened in the 1900s.
So that would be like almost like probably worth quite like around like hundreds of billions now.
Yeah, but unfortunately in 1999, the business went bankrupt.
How?
Well, like they owned other department stores as well. Like the mall kept the name, but they owned like a Sears as well. And based on what I found, they went bankrupt, but like they still had wealth. They just like didn't continue, I guess, with the business because they went bankrupt. Okay. And also the founder did like pass away. And I believe it was 1907.
Okay.
So, yeah. But even after this, like I said, the family still had a large amount of wealth and was still, like, quite known. Nancy was a successful real estate agent and was known for her generosity, kindheartedness, and intelligence. On January 21st in 1985, Nancy was stabbed to death 21 times and then raped in her apartment. I know, I'm kind of just jumping into it.
Right into it.
An acquaintance of the Eaton family and close friend to Nancy, Ernest John Andrew Lashon Hughes, referred to as Andrew Lashon Hughes, who was also a member of the prominent Canadian Osler family, admitted to the rape and murder of Nancy, but was found not guilty by reason of insanity. It was found that Andrew had a brain dysfunction from birth and had unsuccessfully sought psychiatric treatment only 3 days before the murder. But supposedly, he informed his uncle that he was quote-unquote going to lose control prior to doing what he did to Nancy. And because of this, Andrew was held to the Ontario Review Board, which is a collective group of people consisting of judges, lawyers, psychiatrists, psychologists, and public members, appointed by a lieutenant governor in council. And what the Ontario Review Board is known for is they review the status of every person who has been found to be not criminally responsible or unfit to stand trial for criminal offenses on account of a mental disorder. So in 1986, Andrew went to trial for Nancy's murder, and on the ninth day, Assistant Crown Attorney Paul Chimuck conceded that 19-year-old Andrew was legally insane when he stabbed Nancy. A jury of 7 men and 5 women took 17 minutes to reach a verdict of not guilty by reason of insanity, which that just seemed really quick to me.
It literally seems like they went in there, said hi, and was like, we're all good? Yep. Yeah. Okay.
We're good? Okay, cool. Associate Chief Justice Frank Callaghan immediately ordered that Andrew be held in a maximum security mental health institution in Penetanguishene until authorities determined that he was no longer dangerous. Andrew also became subject to annual reviews by the Ontario Review Board. So basically every year they kind of review his case and everything.
Oh, okay.
So in 1992, Andrew was transferred to a medium security psychiatric hospital unit in Kingston, where his risk assessments continued to be high. Fast forwarding to 1998, Andrew was at a therapeutic impasse, which basically means that therapy stops making progress, whether that be because the client unacknowledges things, might become stagnant, they might stop participating, etc.
Okay.
So basically, this form of rehabilitation was not working for Andrew. And in the later months of 1998, Andrew was assessed by Dr. John Bradford, who diagnosed Andrew and started him out on a new medication. Now, they never mentioned what the diagnosis was, but when I searched up the medication that Dr. Bradford prescribed to Andrew, it said that it was used to treat, or sorry, that it was an SSRI and that it was used to treat depression, and also sometimes used for OCD, panic attacks, anxiety, or PTSD. And apparently under Dr. Bradford's supervision, Andrew began making steady progress. So in 1999, when Andrew received his yearly review from the Ontario Review Board, the board permitted Andrew to be transferred to Royal Ottawa Mental Health Centre with Dr. Bradford's personal undertaking to be his attending psychiatrist and to supervise his progress in treatment. In 2001, Andrew was a student and attended Algonquin College while living at the Royal Ottawa Hospital. He was allowed to leave to socialize and study as long as it was within a 100-kilometer radius. Which, like, I saw, or when I read that, I was like, I'm not too sure how I feel about that, considering, like, he's still kind of, like, in trial and everything. And
yeah, as soon as you said that, I was like, ugh.
Yeah, I don't know. This whole case kind of makes me, like, uneasy a little bit, but following this transfer to Royal Ottawa Mental Health Center, Andrew continued to make positive progress, including a slow reintegration into community living. After the December 2005 Ottawa Review Board hearing, Andrew was granted discharge into the community. Which, again, not sure how I feel about that.
Especially, but, like, you know, after stabbing somebody to death 21 times.
Yeah. But nonetheless, now with this being said, at any time, the Ontario Review Board could take away these privileges. So okay. Even though he was, like, quote-unquote discharged, his case was still being monitored. And if they felt at any time he was, like, a risk or anything like that, they could obviously, like, bring him back in or whichever.
Oh, okay.
But still. In 2006, Andrew asked for an absolute discharge, which means that the individual accused is found not to be a significant threat to the safety of the public. The person is no longer under the jurisdiction of the Ontario Review Board and not subject to any condition. And Dr. Bradford supported this.
So they supported to take him off of it.
Yeah. They were like, yeah.
So how... He's good. Like, I'm thinking, like, how long after is this now again?
So this is in 2006, and he committed the crime in 1985.
So that was just about 21 years later.
And he's been, like, Dr. Bradford has been on Andrew's case since, I believe they said 1998.
Okay.
Yeah, 1998.
So he had almost 10 years with him at this point.
Yeah. So Andrew testified that the night before the murder on January 20th, Nancy let Andrew sleep on her sofa. They were friends, so it's not that weird that he slept over. His testimony showed that he woke up at 8 a.m. on January 21st and stabbed Nancy 21 times with a butcher knife.
Did they ever say, like, a trigger of, like, why or just happened?
No, and, you know, I tried to do a lot more, like, research, I guess, kind of, like, on his life growing up and even, like, more on Nancy, and there really wasn't a lot. It was more just about the trial.
Okay.
And even that, I would, like, I'll kind of talk about it later. It was kind of confusing to understand some of the parts because there was a lot of information, like, contradicting itself.
For sure.
So after he stabbed Nancy 21 times with a butcher knife, it went on to say that he dropped two eggs on the floor and placed an up-potted palm tree on the blood-drenched bed. He left the apartment but returned 6 hours later to rape the dead body. When the Ontario Provincial Police officers arrested him in Nancy's car, which he stole, it was broken down just north of Toronto, and Andrew told police officers that he was on his way to Collingwood to drive off a cliff. There was a lot of information about a judge believing that the Ontario Review Board was being biased with Andrew's case, and speculation surfaced that he was not actually an individual with as bad as mental health as what was being shown over trial. People wanted to see how Andrew would act without his antipsychotic medication, but it was a lot to unpack, and even some things when I was reading I didn't quite understand.
So, like, they just didn't believe him and just wanted him off the meds to see
how he'd act. Yeah, like, there was, like I said before, there was a lot of, like, contradicting articles and things like that. But specifically, one of the judges didn't believe that, well, Dr. Bradford was being ethical. He thought he was almost supporting and, like, enabling Andrew. Hence why he might have been supportive to discharge him. And this judge also thought that the Ontario Review Board was being, like, almost too lenient with the case and wasn't holding up their end.
Oh.
Yeah. So basically, the judge and, like, other people made mention about maybe taking him off his antipsychotic medication, because the medication that Dr. Bradford prescribed, people are saying maybe, like, that stopped the progress and, like, maybe that made him, well, like, almost worse in a sense. So I don't know, this is all, like, speculation, but that's kind of some of the things that I read.
Yeah, it's a little weird because even they were saying that he made progress when he went to him,
but he also was with Dr. Bradford, right? So,
oh, okay.
And he was the one that was, like, making the notes and, like, was working alongside him.
Okay.
Keep in mind, he's been working with him since 1998, relocated to Ottawa to be with him.
Yeah.
So, like, hearing it, I could make the timeline, I could kind of paint out the storyline of it.
For sure.
But again, this is all speculation.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's quite a few articles that are kind of contradicting, and even some, like, underlying trials that happened that I'm just, like, not going to mention because I didn't even really understand them when I was reading it. But obviously, they're out there if you want to do your own research. I think it was also worth mentioning that during the years of this investigation, Andrew had two intimate relationships with people that were part of the Ontario Review Board.
Okay.
Yeah, one was a psychiatric nurse, and the other one was a female patient he would meet in a motel.
The patient I'm not so, like, you know, worried about, but a nurse,
yeah, she was later fired. But so, like I said at the beginning, the review board is, like, compiled of, like, a bunch of different people, and public, like, members of the public are also part of it. So I'm not sure if this patient was, like, an actual patient where he was, or if it was, like, part of, like, the review board.
Okay.
But yeah, I thought you would find that interesting.
Oh my goodness.
But I think it's important at the end of the day to remember that a life was taken. And I think it's important to remember Nancy, and, you know, she was murdered 37 years ago. And to me, it doesn't feel like Andrew got the rehabilitation he clearly needed. I think there was a lot of biases in the case, and I honestly had a bad feeling reading about Dr. Bradford, as I mentioned earlier. But nonetheless, we remember Nancy for who she was, and we hope that her family has gotten the support and closure that they may need.
Yeah, that case is crazy. Like, it's, I don't really feel like he actually was rehabilitated.
Yeah, especially, like, hearing kind of, like, them saying and documenting he wasn't rehabilitated before Dr. Bradford, and then when he was with Dr. Bradford, oh, he's made so much progress. But again,
yeah,
this is obviously our opinion. This is not factual. This is just kind of, like, what I've read.
Is there, like, any information of, like, him now?
I've searched this multiple times, and every time I search it, it brings me back to 2001, just saying that he attended, or he was currently attending, Algonquin College and was able to, like, leave and socialize. But with that being said, there's plenty of resources on the internet if you guys want to go out and look on your own terms. But yeah, that is the end of our case this week. Thank you for listening and supporting us. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Murder in the North Podcast. Tune in next week as we have our very first case suggestion. I don't know what it is, but Zach seems really excited about it. So he'll be sharing that next week.
See you next week.
Stay safe.